Hello and welcome to this podcast from RT Radio 1 of Seascapes, presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard Seascapes, your maritime programme. On this week's edition, we talk to Hugh Oram, author of the beautifully produced Old Achill Island by Stenleg Publishing, which has some remarkable historic images. We'll be hearing from the CEO of Sail Training International, Peter Cardy, on how he started on the water. And Michael Byrne of Sail Training Ireland tells us about tall ship opportunities in these waters and further afield. MEP Pat the Cope Gallagher on fish discards. First on Seascapes to the west of Ireland, and the island of Inishmore, where Alwyn Gill has this month's report from the islands.
The 3,000-plus island community on over 20 islands off the coast of Ireland are a strong and resilient lot, who are well used to surviving battles with the elements, and have, thankfully, come through this recent bout of storms relatively unscathed. But just like everywhere else, life is not always that kind. And battles with the weather or the sea or sickness cannot always be won. The choice is then whether to buckle under or to fight back. When Seana Fitzpatrick of Inishmore in the Aran Islands died of cancer just over a year ago, aged only 16, her family and friends were naturally devastated. However, having received such support throughout Seana's battle with cancer from hospitals and organisations such as Barrettstown, Canteen, Cancer Care West and the Hospice, her parents, Pat and Anne, set up the Smiles for Seana Trust to support other young teenage patients in their fight against cancer. In the short time since Seana's passing, they have raised over €40,000 in her name, which will be directly donated to Crumlin's Children's Hospital to provide new facilities for teenage cancer patients. This is a phenomenal amount in such a small island community. The latest fundraising initiative is a beautiful original song for Seana, written and performed by her close friend and neighbour, Pather O'Gyle. The song My Hero will shortly be available on CD and iTunes, and all the proceeds will go to the Smiles for Seana Trust. It is a deeply moving and fitting tribute to a fantastic young girl with a beautiful smile who will always live just across the wall in Pather's heart. But now, before we play the song, a big míle buíochas to Orla Nicksivna and Gavin Ralston from Silverwood Studios, who made this wonderful production possible. And an important announcement about the ferry contract to Inishmore. From February 1st, the passenger ferry serving Inishmore is no longer run under a government public service contract. No operators applied for the subsidy. So islanders would like to advise interested parties that the contract will be re-advertised and encourage them to submit a tender. A public service contract has been signed for Inishmeon and Inishir, which includes a fixed fare agreement for islanders, but not for Inishmore. In the face of existing operator-imposed rules, such as a ban on carrying bicycles, tools and musical instruments, and with a price hike from €8 to 15, effective from February 2nd, islanders on Inishmore are justifiably worried about any private company having a monopoly on the most lucrative passenger service route in the country. Figures estimate that there are close to 200,000 travelling to the Aran Islands each year, and most of these visit Inishmore, and most travel by ferry. Agus anois, leis an méid sin ráite, go dtí go gcasfar ar a chéile ar Inishmore, beinnigh sult as an óra an island seo, Ochasa ek padro gael mo wa kain asa wilmud lig fear vrodul.
You live just across the road. I'm not gonna lie, I've missed you loads. From your coloured socks to your pyjamas, your love of champagne like your bubbly laugh. I'm not trying to say goodbye. We'll keep our heads held high. Even though time won't heal our heart, you'll still always be just across the wall. He won't fear, 'cause I know you'll always be near. I know it seems wrong when time doesn't take long. You're a flightless bird, deprived of your song. But I won't be sad. The smiles that we've had will carry me through. They were shinzy and fat. But I'm not trying to say goodbye. Won't shed a tear, won't cry. We'll keep our heads held high. Even though time won't heal our love, you'll still always be just across the wall. I won't fear, I know you'll always be near. You've put on quite a show, that's just how you roll. And I hope you know curly hair, but I know you're up there looking down. I'm not saying what's with all the fuss, even though we can't see. I know you'll always be here with me. Even though we can't see, I know you'll always be here with me.
My Hero, which, as Alwyn Gill said, was composed and performed by her son Pather, of whom she is duly proud. My Hero is dedicated in tribute to the late Shauna Fitzpatrick of Inishmore, helping to raise funds and awareness for Crumlin Children's Hospital. This week saw the passing of actor Peter Gilmore, who over the course of 91 episodes, would you believe, from 1971 to 1980, played the role of Captain James Uneaden, an irascible sea captain, as the era of sail was being replaced by steam. The television series written by Cyril Abraham was based on the mythical figure Ondine, the sea nymph. It was the theme music over the opening credits which captured people's imaginations. The Adagio from Aram Khachaturian's ballet Spartacus. The Uneaden Line theme tune by Aram Khachaturian, or as Terry Wogan liked to call it, the Wundin Line, in tribute to the actor Peter Gilmore, who passed away earlier this week. Next week in Skibbereen, on Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock, a special showing of a film will be held in the Eldon Hotel in the town, the record of an epic voyage in the famed Sandefjord, which was the last of a fleet of sail-only rescue craft designed by the famous Norwegian designer Colin Archer. In attendance at the screening of the Sandefjord, her voyage around the world, will be Tim McGuinness and Sean Cullen, distinguished sailors and seafarers. An admission charge of €5, with all funds going to support Baltimore RNLI, and our thanks to Nigel Towes for that note. Now on Seascapes to our western seaboard, and a newly published book of historic images of Old Achill Island. Whilst the publisher Stenlake Publishing sourced the images, the author is Hugh Oram, writer and broadcaster, who is a long-standing contributor to this programme. He told Seascapes how the book came about.
The poverty in Achill in the old days was absolutely unbelievable, and most people had no choice but to emigrate. A lot of people from Achill went to Scotland, but a lot actually went over to America, and Achill men actually built the Erie Canal from Lake Erie down to the Hudson River in New York State. And even today in Cleveland in Ohio, about 30,000 residents there all dutifully claim Achill heritage. All the pictures are exactly the same, with so much detail in them. And as I say, around 100 years ago, desperate poverty on the island, but at the same time they were building up their whole tourism industry, and lots of people were actually coming to stay on Achill from Ireland, England, further afield. And then we had this sort of great influx of all the painters like Paul Henry, and then later on writers like Graham Greene. So it soon attracted a very distinguished group of people. That's right. And when he got to Achill with his wife, he liked it so much that about a week after he got there, he sat on a rock beside the sea, and so the story goes, he tore up his return rail ticket to London, where he was living at the time, and they actually lived on Achill for the next sort of decade or so. It wasn't until the sort of first bridge was opened to Achill, and was 1888. Before that, sort of, it was very difficult sort of getting access to the island. And then sort of slightly after that, the railway came, but that was a very long and tedious journey. And it's interesting that today the site of the old railway line to Achill is now a fantastic greenway for, you know, walking and cycling and jogging and all the rest of it.
So what brought you to Achill in the first place, Hugh?
For years and years, I've been doing lots of work about tourism, writing about sort of tourist attractions in Ireland, and that's actually what brought me to Achill in the first instance. And I didn't know very much about the place before I got there, but once I was there, absolutely captivated with all the fantastic cliffs and the beaches and all the rest of it. There's an awful lot of sort of buildings on Achill sort of haven't changed since maybe 1920s, 1930s, and of course a lot of more modern stuff as well. And of course I should mention sort of one lady on Achill who had a fantastic connection with the sea. It was Eva O'Flaherty, who ran the St. Coleman's knitting industry on the island for 50 years until she died in 1963. And she had a fantastic love of the sea, and in fact for donkey's years she had this wonderful model of an old-fashioned steamer in her front room, in her front window, that everyone could see for themselves. Because, I mean, Achill's probably one of the very best sea angling venues anywhere in Europe, and all the inland lakes on the island are fantastic. They're good trout fishing. And also Achill's a fantastic place for sort of kite surfing on all the blue beaches on the north and the south of the island. So tourism is still very, very important.
This book is obviously going to do well for the tourist market, but it also really helps people, I suppose, who live on the island today to realise the kind of heritage that they have.
That's right. I mean, so many things from the past have just disappeared. I mean, one of the things that was really big on Achill was shark oil, because Achill at one stage had the biggest shark oil sort of factory in the world. And the lookouts used to be up on the cliffs, and they'd tell the guys in the curraghs that the sharks on the way. They catch the sharks, and between 1950 and 1975, they actually caught, I think it was about 10,000-12,000 sharks, and they processed all the liver oil, and it was used for things like lubricating aero engines. So that was a huge industry, and the sharks went away, and the whole thing just disappeared. I mean, it's a very abundant sort of seal population there, and fortunately they're sort of largely untouched. And I've sort of heard stories, which I've recorded in the book, about sort of people going from Achill into Westport and literally seeing hundreds of seals along the way. What really surprised me, how poor everyone was on Achill, and yet somehow they managed to sort of scrape a living. And there are lots of sort of very funny stories as well, because in the late 19th century, one of the landlords decided to upgrade the old sort of thatched cottages for his tenants, and he built some brand new bungalows with slate roofs and glass in the windows, and the people actually hated them because it was so sort of clean and the light came pouring in. Yeah, all the painters over the years who've worked on Ackle have all commentated on the sort of fantastic quality of light and clouds and so on, and the effect of the sea. And you hardly get it anywhere else, even in the west of Ireland. So it's really unique.
Hugh Oram, author of Old Ackle Island, and our question is: Old Ackle Island is published by whom? By answering that question, answers on a postcard to Seascapes, RTE Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork, or email seascapes@rte.ie. At the recent inaugural Sail Training Ireland Awards in the Oak Room of the Mansion House, Seascapes spoke to Peter Cardy, CEO of Sail Training International, about how he became involved in sailing.
I did my first tall ships race 50 years ago. And I came back from it a very different young man, according to my parents. And certainly changed my life. I remember it now as the time when I turned the corner and actually started to feel that I could do some of the things that I wanted to do, and that my horizons were broader than they had been before. That gave me the ability to work with other people, gave me the ability to lead, as well as to be part of a team. And it does that to so many people. I've met, well, I would say thousands of people now who've had that experience. And actually, we've done the research as well. So it's not simply a collection of personal stories. There's serious evidence for the impact that sail training has on people's lives. I'd sailed in smaller boats, but I hadn't sailed a big boat, and I hadn't sailed out of sight of land, and I hadn't sailed in gales, and I hadn't really been tested to the limit at that time. But it made a different person of me. The captains and the bosuns are the people who actually make the ship, because they're the people who carry the spirit and the atmosphere from one crew to another. And the way that they run the ship, the way that they work with their crew, the way that they encourage and develop them and push them beyond what they think they can do, that really is all absolutely critical. So you've not just got to be a good sailor, you've got to understand young people, you've got to understand how to lead them, how to get them to do things that they didn't know they wanted to do. Poland's a huge country with a small coast, and it has been very important to the Poles to assert their maritime nature. And so all of the Polish ports play a big part in the tall ships races. And Szczecin has it's been behind the tall ships races themselves now for a long time. That's very important to us. But of course, the Polish ships, with those incomprehensible names, the Dama Jerzy and so on, they are big players in the tall ships races. They're very recognisable and they're very loyal.
And also, of course, you get somebody then like a character like Captain Burkhart, and talking about the Beaufort scale as he did here in the Mansion House here during the tall ships races in Dublin. And it was just terrific to hear him bring something that people nearly don't fully understand, bringing it to life.
Yes, he is a wonderful man. And one of the interesting things is that the ship that he runs is almost completely new to sail training. It's been reconstructed and refitted, especially for the purpose. And it's a marvellous ship, great atmosphere, very interesting outlook on things that the captain brings, and altogether splendid participant, splendid contributor to sail training and to the tall ships races. We are in discussion with Dublin at the moment about returning. We know the city's very keen. Last summer's event was such a great event that we would certainly like to bring the tall ships back to Dublin. But then we love Cork and Waterford as well. So there are quite a lot of years in a decade. So we're in discussion now with Dublin City and Port about coming back here. And there's a lot of enthusiasm on both sides.
Peter Cardy, CEO of Sail Training International. Well, also at that gathering was manager of Sail Training Ireland, Michael Byrne. Michael had news of opportunities in our waters and overseas aboard tall ships for the year ahead.
The big thing for us this year was to try and create opportunities around Ireland that Irish people could get involved in without having to travel across the world to the international events. So we've a couple of schemes set up. The first is become known as the Irish Tall Ships Fleet Maritime Festival Tour. So there's a fleet of 5 to 6 tall ships sailing from one maritime festival to the next. They'll be starting in early May and continuing on until June, and there'll be up to over 60 voyages on each. So between each maritime festival, there's a voyage taking place, and in total there's 534 voyage berths available on that series. To get in touch with us and get more information and book your place, if you'd like to go on to www.irishsailtraining.com, and our details are on there, you can get in touch, or our email address info@irishsailtraining.com. The next set of voyages we have planned is a Scottish vessel operated by Ocean Neutral Scotland, taking place between August 12th and September 8th. And that'll be 4 voyages from Scotland to Belfast, to Dublin to Belfast, and there's 12 voyage berths available on each. Now, the important thing, I suppose, to remember is that these voyage places are available to all age groups from the age of 15 to the age of 101. There's no limitations. We do encourage the younger category, age 15 to 25, but there's no limitations on the age. They're very reasonably priced. The Irish Sea Fleet is costing between €320 and €480 for a voyage, which is excellent value. And we've lots of availability, so do get in touch and let's fill these ships. Sail Training International are the global organisation organising the international events, such as the Tall Ships Races that came to Dublin. They have 3 main events this year, which are the Baltic Sea Tall Ships Race Series, which is the annual race series. That's happening in July. Then there's the Mediterranean Sea Regatta, which will happen in September. And then in late September, October, there's an event down in Australia from Sydney to Auckland in New Zealand. So without Sail Training International, these huge international events wouldn't take place. Under Sail Training International, we are the national sail training organisation of Ireland, and we're a member of theirs. There's 26 national sail training organisations around the world, and we all meet annually at the conference. So there really is an international backing behind this and great connections. We put together a scheme as part of the Irish Sea Fleet Tour. There's going to be 5 ships sailing from Liverpool to Dublin. They'll do a voyage over 5 days. They're going to be recruiting trainees from Liverpool through an organisation called the Merseyside Adventure Sailing Trust, or MAST. The chairperson, Jim Graves, is recruiting Irish people in the schools in Liverpool to sail on the voyages. They'll arrive into Dublin on the 17th to 19th of May, and they'll be on the quayside there during the Dublin Docklands Summer Festival, and we'll organise a gathering party on board and hopefully have a few of the local councillors and dignitaries down to greet them, and generally invite their relations and friends from around Ireland.
Finally on Seascapes this week in fisheries, the European Parliament has decided to put an end to discards. One man who has been campaigning as an MEP to end this practice is Pat the Cope Gallagher.
Well, the report has been carried by about 500 votes to 100. Not surprising, because I think we all want a reform of the common fisheries policy. But of course, this is not the final stage yet. The next one is a series of trialogues between ourselves and the Parliament. I'll be involved in that. The Commission and the Presidency. And we're hoping that we will achieve consensus or a compromise before the end of the Irish Presidency. But it's a major step forward. It will be beneficial, I would hope, from regionalisation, small islands, coastal islands, and remembering that most of our vessels are under 1,500 metres. And all of those factors will be taken into consideration. But of course, we must also also sound a note of warning. This is the second last stage, not the last stage, and there will be changes. In principle, they have agreed a calendar for the discards, but I'm also pleased that included in the report is avoidance and minimisation and incentives. It would be almost impractical to end discards in the morning. It was in a number of years. We have to deal with this in a practical way, and we don't want the small fish coming ashore going to fish meal. We want the small fish to remain in the water, to grow and develop for further years. And in addition to that, we have the Hague preference. It was an amendment that I had tabled because of my experience attending Council of Ministers meeting here in Europe over the years. It's been in place since 1976, but we almost had to beg every year. And the whole purpose of that was because the European Council of Ministers at that time, they recognised the underdeveloped state of the Irish fishing industry in the 70s. So they decided that there would be an additional allocation each year for some species of whitefish. And now, as a result of my amendment being carried by 425 votes to 215, which means that it will now be enshrined in the report. But I also must say that has to get through the trialogue process. Of course, there'll be some opposition to it, but the vote in Parliament should reflect the Parliament's wishes to the Council when we discuss it.
Pat the Cope Gallagher, MEP, will be hearing more about this issue in the coming weeks as the European Union and the Irish Presidency and Minister Coveney determine how the end to this practice of discards is to be implemented. On Seascapes next Friday, NUI Galway, marine resources and the biomedical industry. We preview the Angling Ireland show in the National Exhibition Centre in Clochrane and the annual Specimen Fish Committee Awards. A call for flags, banners and burgees from the National Maritime Museum. A Sailor in Midair by Norman Freeman. And much more. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.